This might take a couple of days. Got to be honest.
A couple of days? Is that good?
Might take a couple of days. And he's going back today.
The Grammys air Sunday night on CBS. And every year leading up to the Grammys, they give the media, that's us, an opportunity to go down to Grammy headquarters and interview people who are associated with the show or aren't, who just happen to be there to try to promote something. And Beer Mug is the guy that we choose to send out to do those interviews. And you're about to see why.
Because he knows what he's doing. He's a professional interviewer.
Professional, baby.
He's like Mug, did you have a good time yesterday?
R. Murrow of his generation.
He is. That's true. Yeah.
I had a great time being a... Most of all, my favorite thing about the Grammy roundtables is the free food that they give you.
Sure.
I mean, it is a buffet.
Not that you talk to Spike Lee.
No, but
they have a buffet that's free.
That's a highlight as well, but yeah.
So tell me about Project Almanac.
Project Almanac.
Quickly.
I interviewed one of the actresses in that, Michelle DeFrades. She plays the mean girl in that. And Project Almanac is these kids who find a blueprint of a time machine, and they build it and go back to they go into the past.
Now, what's the movie that Ralph told us about that just opened up last weekend?
Yes,
right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, what I love about Muggs is that he doesn't let the guests talk very much.
He's got so much to offer.
He feels like this is his time to speak.
It is the Mug Show.
From what I've learned from the movie Back to the Future, that could be...
One of the best movies.
One of the best movies. That could be very devastating to know too much about your own future.
That is true.
Because in that sense, you by knowing about too much about your own future, you could screw up the present past. I was trying to explain myself not very well there.
But you were making a good point, though. I mean, that's a legitimate conversation to have in the discussion of time travel.
I was making a good point being up until the end.
Well, I think it's important for her to know what you think about Back to the Future, a movie that came out 30 years ago.
Well, she agreed with me. She also liked that movie.
She probably would like to talk about her project, yeah. I'm guessing.
All right.
Yeah, let me tell you what I like about myself and the movies that I've watched.
Did you ever see True Grit? I mean the original, not the remake with Jeff Bridges. I don't think you just start reviewing movies for her.
So,
good use of her time.
An actual band said down across from Muggs, and it's Fallout Boy, and I don't know how you get to this question.
You guys sweat a lot.
We do. Well, I'm actually the only one in the band that doesn't really sweat. Patrick's like...
This is Pete.
Yeah.
We used to, like, try to figure out whose guitar strap was whose, and his smells insane. Yeah.
Smells like a hockey player's...
Yeah, not good.
Not
all bad.
Good.
Yeah, like a hockey player's not good.
Wow. I saw them at Acoustic Christmas when they got off stage, and they were all drenched in sweat. They play hard. That's what I was talking about with them.
Hey, Muggs, we understand you guys all sweat.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
a pretty good get for Muggs, though, to get an actual band we play here on K-Rock.
All right, now Amber Smith.
Yeah.
What is she best known for?
Being a supermodel.
That's Amber Heard.
Oh, that's Amber Heard. Being a supermodel in the 90s, I would say.
Yes.
And softcore porn.
Muggs sits down across from Amber Smith and cannot come up with the phrase one day at a time. And this is him trying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's addiction. How besides going, you know, the rehab path, I'm sure. Every day is a continuing process of, rehabilitation, right?
Oh, you should be a counselor. You should work in a rehab. I'm inspired. Can I hear that one more time?
Oh, sure. That was great.
I don't know what happened there.
Is she had a problem with alcohol. That's what we're referring to here.
No, pain pills.
She was a celebrity rehab.
Yeah. She was in recovery. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean. It's addiction. How besides going, you know, the rehab path, I'm sure every day is a continuing process of, rehabilitation, right?
Mike, let me ask you a question.
Boy, I tell you. I don't know what you're saying.
Let me ask you a question because I have some experience with this. When you get lost in that circle of hell, do you realize that you're in the middle of it?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. And there's no coming
out.
There's
no
stopping. Nope.
I love when he starts with the lectures. Addiction. As if he's in the beginning. He's right. In front of the classroom.
Right. So now he's still sitting across from Amber Smith, and he continues to talk about himself.
I don't think I'm a codependent, but I definitely have forms of I have an addictive personality, I think, when it comes to substances.
Right.
And Dr. Drew would shun me for that, I feel.
Yeah.
And I've learned to cope with it. I actually have anxiety disorder.
Yes,
bad,
me too.
Bad. And like that's how I think I tend to turn to substances to kind of cope with that. But I
is there
It sounds like you're eavesdropping on the world's worst date. That's what it sounds like when Beer Mug does an interview.
How dare
you,
Ralph.
When you get lost, you realize it. When you've been talking for a half hour, yeah. Do you realize that?
No, not at all, because I'm trying to connect with the guest that I'm talking to.
But person. Connecting means that she's allowed to interact.
Yeah, she interacted a little bit.
Mugs, I find that exercise, like natural things, like exercise works.
Right.
And, yeah.
Mugs, why do you think, serious question, why do you think Amber Smith is interested in your life?
Well, I was trying to, like I said, I was trying to relate and try to find some common ground with her. So, we, you know, to get the interview going.
All right, Shepard. They're the guys that have Geronimo.
Oh, yeah, sure. Big hit.
Sit down across from Mugs, and this happens.
How'd you learn bass, Emma? Did you get, like, a manual on how to play bass? Like, because that's how, you know, Sid Vicious from the Sex Pistols?
He doesn't give her a
unbelievable.
How did you learn bass? Because.
Let me tell you a story about the Sex Pistols. Yeah.
He literally, one night, went into a hotel room, got a how to play bass manual, got drunk, and learned how to play bass. Really? Did you do that, too?
No.
Nope.
What do you think the odds are, dear mom? What do you think the odds are? Let me just give me a number that you think she also got a manual, went into a hotel, and got drunk, and that's how she learned how to play bass.
Probably about 5,000 to 1.
Well, it was worth a shot.
What did Sid Vicious think about Back to the Future? Do we know?
Or about being codependent.
Now, here's where Muggs takes it even a step further, because now Muggs isn't just talking about Muggs. He's talking about Muggs' friend Randy.
Now, how'd you guys write Geronimo? Because that song is so awesome and catchy. My buddy Randy, that's his favorite song. He actually, because I hear it a lot working at the radio station, but when I'm, you know, hanging out on the weekend, that's all my buddy Randy plays is Geronimo.
Is that what he's putting on his Rogaine?
Is that the same guy?
It's when he's using his razors. No, yeah, I'm just trying to relate to the guest.
That's okay. Oh, damn it, stop saying that. What? You know how you relate to a guest? You let them speak. That's what they really relate to. Someone who allows them to talk.
Let me ask a question, seriously. Then we have to take a break, and I know we got Spike Lee and other interviews we're going to hear from Beer Mug from the Grammy Roundtable, but I this is another serious question for me because I'm slack-jawed over this. Why is How Did You Write the Song not enough? Why do you have to include your friend Randy who likes the song? Like, what does that add to the question?
I want to make them feel good about the art that they put out there.
But why won't you let them talk about it?
That one might make them feel good. Being able to talk might make them feel good.
They were talking.
No, they weren't. You went from how do you write that song to how much Randy loves it. They know more about Randy now than they know about their own songwriting process.
And certainly than we know about their songwriting process.
Well,
they never get to it.
He gets into the meaning of Geronimo with Shepard.
It's funny because normally Geronimo, well, he was an American Indian, right?
Yeah.
And it's normally related to when somebody is either jumping out of a plane, you yell Geronimo, or like in your song, Bombs Away, they yell Geronimo. Why do they yell Geronimo? It's funny because I think it was in the movie Naked Gun. Oh, no, maybe it was Hot Shots Part 2. It was either way. I think it was Hot Shots Part 2, where they're all jumping out of the plane, and all the guys, like, they're in the Air Force, and they're jumping out, and then this American Indian jumps out of the plane. They're all yelling Geronimo, and this American Indian jumps out, and he's like, myself! Or send me! Is stupid. That was a stupid aside. I'm sorry. I didn't bring that up.
Oh,
my God.
Freaking believable.
Well, now I know a lot about how the song Geronimo was written.
I'm embarrassed.
Wow. Muggs sits across from Spike Lee. Next.
The host of the Grammys, LL Cool J, joins us in about a half an hour or so right here on the Kevin Bean Show on K-Rock. They are Sunday night on CBS. Right now, Beer Mug is taking us through the interviews that he did down at the Grammy Roundtable. Where is this? Is this down by where the Grammys are being held? Right.
Is this thing on?
Yes,
unfortunately. Right at Staples Center.
All right, fantastic. So we just heard interviews with Fall Out Boy and with Geronimo, with Amber Smith.
Beer Mug talked all about his.
I don't think we talked to Geronimo. I think we
talked
to Shepard.
Shepard, yeah, he's Geronimo. Sorry, Geronimo, my bad. Where are we now? What are we up to?
We're at Spike Lee.
So Spike Lee,
legendary movie director Spike Lee.
How much do you know about him, Muggs?
Well, I actually, surprisingly, a lot. I've seen a lot of his movies when I was growing up.
We'll get to that. I didn't think you were going to give me the answer that you gave him. But here's Muggs introducing Spike Lee.
With none other than legendary director, actor, writer, he's done it all, Mr. Spike Lee, How you doing, sir?
Good. You looked up Professor.
Oh, Professor. I'm sorry. Professor Spike Lee.
He made me nervous right there.
Really?
Yeah.
Couldn't tell. Very cool.
By the way, I would be a little intimidated sitting across from Spike Lee in a situation where I wasn't.
Because he's black? Is that what it be?
Because he's very smart and very quick, and I would feel unprepared to interview him on the fly.
He's also a little bit dickish.
He certainly can be.
He was cool to me, but I was still nervous in his presence.
That's because you're black.
So I'm going to let you guys pick where Muggs went with the first question. What does Muggs say to Spike Lee to begin this interview after the intro?
What's going on with the Knicks?
Bean?
That's a great guess. I'm going to say, because we know Muggs wishes he lived in Compton, that he feels a kinship with all African Americans.
I grew up watching many of your movies.
Thank you very much.
The first movie I saw, actually, believe it or not, was Tales from the Hood.
Was exec produced.
And I saw
a classic.
Yes, and then Malcolm X, and I saw Crooklyn, because my mom's from Brooklyn.
All right, now, Spike Lee makes the mistake of thinking that he's in a conversation with somebody that's normal, so Spike Lee asks Muggs about his mom, and then all hell breaks loose.
What neighborhood?
You know? She grew up whatever Little Odessa is right now. It's like the Russian section now, but like back in the she was born in 43.
Oh, it's Coney Island.
Yeah. Near Coney Island.
Yeah, Brighton Beach.
And she's the reason I'm a Brighton Beach. Uh-huh. She's the reason I'm a Dodger fan.
All right.
And
Brooklyn Dodgers.
She went to Ebbets Field and all that. He was interested in me, you guys.
Look, that's the best interview I've heard all morning. So
Spike
far,
interviewing him.
It's again. It's a conversation, at least.
But isn't it still we're finding out much more about Muggs than we are about the guests?
Of course.
Oh, of course. That's always the case.
Because I'd be more interested in where Spike Lee grew up and what his life was like if I had this opportunity, I think.
Well, Spike asked him. I mean, it's not really his fault. He's just responding to
Spike. He didn't know. He didn't know what was happening in front of him at that point.
Oh, he never does. You're giving way too much credit, Kevin.
I'm saying nobody knows when they sit down with Muggs, how much Muggs likes to talk about Muggs. So he's doing a movie called The Sweet Blood of Jesus, which is a remake, and Muggs asks him about that.
So you guys reinterpreted it.
That's not even a word.
Contemporary version.
Right.
Ganja and Hess.
Right.
You reinterpreted it.
Reinterpreted. That's it, right?
And then Muggs has a very good grasp on the info.
The film is about addiction. In particular, people who are addicted to blood.
Like drinking, like ingesting blood?
They need it to live.
Wow. Wow. So, like, that's how they get their nutrition?
Yes.
It's an African tribe?
No, this takes place in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, okay. So, tell me, like, how this story... Is this based on real life?
No.
You can hear him getting annoyed.
All the blood drinking people, all the ones that we know, we hang out with, finally someone's telling their story. Beer mug.
Well,
they're called vampires.
Why did you guess Africa?
I thought I was the bio that I had
before
he
sat
down. I scanned it, and for some reason.
You saw Africa?
I saw African tribe, I thought.
You saw African American, and you saw it maybe?
No, no.
Has something to do with Africa?
No, no. I literally thought it was about an African tribe. But,
so you made that up now, looking back on it, though. That just is something you just invented.
I don't know. I actually have to look at the paper again. I don't know why I said that, but that's what I thought I saw on the paper.
It's about addiction, in particular, people who are addicted to blood.
Like drinking, like ingesting blood?
They need it to live.
Wow. Wow. So, like, that's how they get their nutrition?
Yes.
It's an African tribe?
No, this takes place in Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, okay. So, tell me, like, how is this based on real life?
No.
No.
No, David. This is not real life.
Spike got up and walked away, didn't he?
Yeah, he didn't like me too much after that.
He didn't like it from the beginning.
Is that the end of Spike?
Yeah, that's the end.
That was it?
Yeah.
How did I do?
Really
fantastic.
Well.
Are you really well?
Can we send you back?
Standing over!
Boy, we sure learned a lot more about Muggs than we did about Spike Lee, didn't we?
Yeah, we learned a lot more about Muggs than we did about Amber Smith as well.
Fallout Boy, everybody. Hey, Jimmy Pardo next hour, actress Regina King coming up at 9. First, though, we got to talk about something that the guys have been making fun of me for the last 2 days. Is it possible that you didn't know until this week, Kevin, that I can't snap my fingers? Because I know I've mentioned that before.
Yeah, I must have forgotten it because that's stunning. That you can't snap your fingers, because I thought that was a given, like everybody can do that when they're born. Mm-hmm. Well, you come out of the womb going like that.
I don't know if you come out of the womb but eventually.
Well, you have to learn how to do it. I mean, at some point, doesn't somebody have to teach you how to do it, like with everything else?
I don't think anyone sits you down to teach you how to snap.
Here's your lesson on how to snap your fingers.
Really?
No.
Look, I have tried it. My whole life, I have tried to snap my fingers because obviously I've seen lots of people doing it, and it'd be fun to be able to. But yesterday,
see, that's my favorite part. My favorite part is not that you can't do it, but that you've been trying your whole life. And
I have been trying. Yesterday, I said to Mrs. Bean, I said, "All right, seriously, what's the deal with this snapping the fingers?" And she said, "You take this finger here, your middle finger here, you put it on your thumb, and then you push it down like that so that it, you know, so that your finger hits the bottom of your hand." And I watched her do it, and I copied her movement exactly. And this is what I get. No snap.
Yeah, it just sounds like
it's not that I'm not
trying. Rubbing.
Yeah, it is weird rubbing.
What's happening?
It's not that I'm not trying. It's not that I'm not doing exactly what she showed me, but it just doesn't make a noise.
Kevin,
so what's up with that?
He had a lesson yesterday.
He took a lesson in how to snap.
He sat down with his wife.
No snap.
To learn how to snap.
So
do it harder. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
So it's not my fault, though, right?
Do you have normal skin on your fingers?
That's a great question.
Right? Is it somehow?
Well, I mean, I burned off all of my fingertips to stay out of the FBI database, if that's what you're asking,
babe. That's my question, yes.
But it's the same.
Is your skin made out of velvet?
It's the same. I'm even worse with my right hand, by the way. Listen to this. That's it. That's all I get. I'm doing the exact thing that she shows me how to do. The exact thing.
Bobcat Goldthwait was on the show and said, snapping is what you refer to as easy as.
Right.
Like, that's the definition of easy.
We're going to take calls, by the way, about the thing that everyone can do that you can't do at 1-800-520-1067. I know that you guys have made fun of the fact that I don't know how to blow bubbles from bubble gum either, and I've tried that many times.
Favorite part, again, is not that you can't do it.
I can't do it.
But that you've tried many times.
Well, let's be honest, Kevin. You can't whistle.
You can't whistle. That's something everybody can do, and no one has to teach you how to whistle. You just know how to whistle.
Let's hear it.
You just put your lips together and blow.
Do it. Nope, you're just blowing air out. One more try.
I can whistle loud. I can do that all day, but not.
Yeah.
There it is.
Oh,
see?
Okay.
Oh, all right, B, let's hear a snap, bitch.
Nope. All right, let's talk to Lisa real quick. She's up first on line one in Lakewood again. If there's something everyone can do but you can't, that's the topic this morning on the Kevin Meacham. 1-800-520-1067. I think Lisa and I are going to be friends. What's going on, girlfriend?
Yeah, I can't snap. I've never been able to snap.
And what do you suppose is going on there?
You know what? I self-diagnosed high-functioning Asperger's.
What?
Are you just mocking
are
me
you
at this
kidding?
Point?
No, I don't know why I can't snap. But
wait, yeah. You just mentioned Asperger's.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, maybe there's a correlation.
Have you ever set aside time to learn, like Bean has?
Yeah, I had a lesson.
Yeah, I have tried.
Oh, God.
So you take the middle finger and you put it on your thumb, and then you do the motion that you've seen other people do, and the sound just doesn't happen, right?
Right. And I'm doing it right now. I can't do it.
Right. So what's that about?
That's about both of you need a helmet. That's what that's about. You're window lickers.
But, Kevin, if we're doing the thing that you're supposed to do and there's no snap, it's not intentional. It's not that we're not trying.
And which one of you can't whistle?
That's Kevin.
That's Kevin.
I can't whistle either.
Lisa, what's going on?
You got a lot of problems, Lisa.
Are you in a rubber room right now? Where are you calling this from?
I'm actually really smart, and just I know that the diagnosis you guys gave of Kevin for Asperger's made me start thinking, and I'm thinking I might have that too.
All right.
Because I have a lot of similarities. The only thing is I have a lot of weird thoughts in my head, but I don't Twitter, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it probably is, yeah. And by the way, Bean is the one that has Asperger's, but we know exactly what you're talking about. All of the symptoms and all the things that we've described, you have as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Well, thank you for the call, Lisa. Please get some help, and we appreciate you dialing in.
What are the chances that people with Asperger's can't
make any
snap
sense.
Their fingers?
Doesn't make any sense, because physically, I'm well, I'm a human specimen. I mean, I couldn't look or be any better, and I'm the healthiest man in the world. So physically, I got nothing wrong with me. What else could be standing in the way of being able to snap my fingers?
Kevin,
I don't know.
Brought up a great point. Are your fingers velvet?
I don't believe
so. I mean, that's
so.
The only thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
Christina writes in on the Kevin Bean Twitter account, by the way, try your ring finger instead. I can't snap with my middle finger. Yes, I have tried that as well. I've tried all of the fingers.
He has exhausted every aspect of snapping.
I have.
Is there like a professional you can go to?
You know what I did? I didn't look for a YouTube video. Usually you can find a tutorial on any topic. So maybe that's where I need to try next.
Yeah.
All right. What's the thing that everyone...
Do it again. Do it again. Do it again.
What's the thing that everyone can do except for you? 1-800-520-1067. Call us next. We'll talk to you on K-Rock.
Try it again.
One more time.
Oh,
hey, that was pretty close. Pretty close.
Is there a little taste of it there?
A little tiny?
You almost snapped your fingers.
Here's the thing, you guys. Kevin and Bean Show, 106.7 KRQ, Friday morning. By the way, lots of ways to get in touch with the show on the Kevin and Bean Facebook page. You can tweet us at Kevin and Bean. You can text the show anytime to KROQ, just the number 2, KROQ. Hearing from a lot of listeners, like Juliet, who writes in, Kevin, you're totally wrong. You don't just know how to snap your fingers out of the womb. I'm teaching my 4-year-old daughter to snap her fingers now. You need to be shown how to do it, and a lot of people can't do it. Don't feel bad, Bean. This from Monica. Hey, don't let them give you crap. I remember being about the age 5 or 6 and my aunt was teaching me. It took me years to get the hang of snapping my fingers. It's not something people can just do. It's like saying everyone can roll their R's, and I can't do that no matter how hard I try. And Allie, who's your favorite? David, who wrote in?
Oh, he's the best.
Oh, God bless him. Yeah, David said, I can't swing on a swing. I just sit there, moving, no swinging.
He moves like he's trying to pull on the swing, but he can't swing.
So what can you do that everyone else can do is the topic here. Let's go to line one, please, and bring in Mike from Torrance. Here's one I don't think I've ever heard of before.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Everybody else can do what that you can't?
I cannot wink with my left eye.
You can't wink with your left? Can you wink with your right eye?
Yep.
Huh.
Why?
I have no idea.
Have you ever taken lessons like Bean did yesterday?
Every time I try to wink, I end up blinking both eyes, and I can't just wink.
So you have trouble separating the movement of one eye at a time. You can do your right eye, but if you do your left eye, it ends up closing them both.
I just can't do it with my left eye.
How did you discover this, by the way? It's an odd thing to know about yourself.
Well, I was trying to wink at somebody on my left side.
Okay, first of all, never wink at somebody. Don't do that.
It's got to hurt your game, man, with a lady. All right. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call. Let's go to line 6 in Long Beach. This is going to be Johnny on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hey, Johnny, what the hell's going on with your power, by the way? Why is the power out for like 10 hours a day in Long Beach lately?
First off, what's up, man? Good morning.
Hi.
And
okay. All right. You go ahead then.
As far as that goes, I'm luckily far away from that, so I'm not affected by
it. Okay, good.
I don't know what's going on down there.
What can't you do that everybody else seems to be able to?
I was born with something wrong in my hips that I can't sit Indian style.
Aww. Can't sit Indian style?
Like cross-legged?
Maybe. Can you do it loosely?
I can loosely do it, but my knees are like way above the ground, and trying to force my knees down just causes incredible pain.
Okay, so at least you've got a physical reason. There's something not quite right with your hips and legs, so you can't do it. That makes sense.
But if I were to, like take ballet and stretch for hours at a time a day, I might be able to achieve it, but it's just...
It'd be worth it, don't you think, to be able to sit Indian style?
I've thought about it, but it hasn't been worth it enough yet.
Yeah, okay. I'm just kidding.
All right. Thank you, Johnny. Let's go to Los Angeles Line 7, please. This is going to be Craig. Hi, Craig. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We are good.
Good. Well, somebody stole my thunder with the text that came in, but I can't roll my R's. And
by the way, that's Chip, too, who's here with us. She can't roll her R's either.
¿Qué es esto? ¿Dónde está el perro? You can't do that? Sucker.
No, I can't.
Try it, Craig. Try it.
Perro. Perro.
It sounds good.
That's not bad.
That's not Chip, bad at all.
Chip, you try it.
Chip, you try it.
I'm going to start laughing. Perro.
Take the marbles out of your mouth. Try it again. Too,
like, Craig, when, Chip is way worse than you. Yeah, you rule.
And every time you say, hey, I can't roll my R's, people go, hey, it's easy. Just do this. I'm like, I've tried every goddamn way to do it.
Try it again.
No.
Do it again.
Okay, hold on. Perlo.
Perlo.
I can't. That's amazing.
Perro.
I'm very white.
All right, stop showing off. All right, let's go to... Let's go to Nick and Torrance, line 8, please, talking about things you can't do that everyone else can do. You can get to us on the Facebook page, Twitter account, and also tweeting or texting us at 2KROCK. Hi, Nick, you're up.
Hey, yeah, so I can't skip.
You can't skip?
Yeah, no, I know it seems absolutely, but how I figured it out was when I was like 8 or 9, like second or third grade, we had like this thing where we had to like dance in a circle or run in a circle with some music on and sing a song.
Right.
And we had to dance or skip. And essentially, I would just break out into a full run. Well, I'm standing outside of work right now, and I just tried to skip, and I just break into a full-on sprint. I cannot do it. Something to do with the timing of it.
What? I hope someone was looking out their window at your work.
I know.
What the hell is Nick? Well, he's out front trying to skip again. Looks like he's
working in an industrial area, so people are probably looking at me like I'm a maniac.
Have you had people show you how to do it?
Yes, no, and they're like, it's about timing. I'm like, I totally get it. It's like they put music on. It doesn't work. I mean, I physically think I'm retarded, but it's nothing to do with that.
You understand the fundamentals of skipping. Your body just can't do it.
It's like the 1-2-2, 1-2-2. Right. It doesn't get it. Yeah, no.
Can you do a kickball change?
It's a great question.
Maybe with jazz hands? I mean, I just...
Like dancing, it looks like Ellen, you know, or not Ellen, but, you know, Seinfeld.
Elaine. Yeah.
Elaine, yeah.
Yeah,
you don't want that.
Got it. No one wants that. No,
thank you, Nick. Appreciate the call. We really do. Let's go to line one again, please. In orange, we got Mike. This is one I don't think I've ever heard of somebody not being able to do either. Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Good, thank you. What can everybody else do you can't?
I cannot float on my back in water.
Can't float on your
back.
And
it sucks because it looks so peaceful.
It is, and it's so easy too.
He looks at swimming pools so longingly.
Right. Oh, if I could just.
I can't do it. Can't do it.
What happens? Do you just sink like a stone?
Yeah, my legs fall down, and I just like my back is kind of up, but my legs are straight down. I just can't get my legs to. I can't get them up.
You just have to relax. I mean, that's what it is. Just relax. Just
relax,
lay on top
Mike.
Of the water.
Relax, Mike. Come on.
Again, I've tried.
You know, maybe you're trying too hard.
Maybe I am. I don't know.
You know what you could do, Mike? Put floaties on your legs and then ease out of them.
I guess, but that just seems like a lot of work.
I mean, how bad do you want it, Mike?
That's right. Not, with that attitude, you're never going to float on your back.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate the call. Let's go to line 3, Whittier. This is going to be Chloe. You talk about the example. You were talking about Bobcat yesterday, talking about how snapping your fingers is the easiest thing in the world.
Right.
How about easy as riding a bike? How many times have you heard people say that?
A lot.
All right, Chloe, what's going on?
You can't ride a bike?
Okay, so I can't ride a bike. I was taught how to ride a bike. Like, my dad put me on a bike with training wheels, and training wheels, like, couldn't do it. I could not, like,
Hold up 1 second. When you had the training wheels on, you couldn't ride it?
Well, no, okay, sorry. So when I had the training wheels on, it was fine. I was able to push myself forward and pedal. And then as soon as the training wheels came off, it was a disaster. I couldn't keep myself on the bike. So my dad, like, put me on the bike without the training wheels and then pushed me down a hill hoping that would work.
Wow. Are you positive he was hoping that would work?
Your dad doesn't like
Was it toward the train tracks?
Not that I know of, but there's a chance.
Good luck, Chloe. I'm shutting you now. I hope you don't die. This is so weird.
It's so sad. I don't know what to...
Oh. That's good. You're getting there, Bean.
He's not
That one was close.
Oh, nice.
I got a lot of... Now I got my whole weekend booked.
I don't think you know this story, Allie McKay, but years ago, my wife was traveling, and... found herself sitting next to the Dalai Lama in an airport.
What?
They're both waiting for their planes, and he was very approachable, just hanging out. He had some people that travel with him, but he was not sequestered or being held away from the public. And she went over and sat down next to him. And they sat there and just chatted for several minutes while they enjoyed gummy bears together.
Well, I'm sorry, the real Dalai Lama?
Yes, the real Dalai Lama, yes.
Is this Mad Libs?
No, this is happened. Kevin, you've heard that story before. And now that I see this latest interview that the Dalai Lama just did with the BBC, I guess I'm glad he didn't just nail her in the airport because he seems like, Well, I'm not going to go so far as to say he's a horn dog, but he did say some things that were surprising to me. Look, here's the thing with the Dalai Lama is he is a he's a Tibetan monk who is a spiritual leader to his people. And they believe that he will die and somebody else will come forward and be the new Dalai Lama. It will be passed down mysteriously. And I guess it's a fascinating thing to look into because I guess they have some series of tests that they go through that only the true new Dalai Lama will be able to complete. So he was being asked about who's going to succeed him. Where's the new Dalai Lama out there in the world? And he said, well, we don't know, but it could be a woman if she's hot enough.
Oh.
Which isn't my understanding of how religion works.
No, but I like it.
let's hear a little bit of the tape with the actual Dalai Lama being interviewed by the BBC talking about his hot successor.
If female Dalai Lama come, then right. That female
will be
must be very attractive.
It's just gonna really.
Now, I think some people, my face.
You're joking. I'm assuming.
Oh,
you're not joking.
Oh
no,
I mean true.
He's not joking. Her face must be very, very attractive. Otherwise, not of much use. Is the quote from
Wow.
The
Wow.
If you had to list the people that said that, he would not even show
top
up.
Top 1,000.
That's awesome.
So what does how she looks have to do with whether she's the true Dalai Lama and she could be the spiritual leader to her people? I don't understand. So we asked Dave, is there any way you can get the Dalai Lama on the line with us? And I believe we have him on the phone right now. Hi, Dalai Lama.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, we're fine. We're just, as much of the world is, very surprised by this recent interview you did with the BBC, sir.
Why are you surprised?
Well, because it just seems like what a person looks like doesn't have anything to do with their value to others within the religion. It seems like if their heart is pure and they've got the right message and they're ministering to their people, that's what's important.
But life is more than just spiritual or mental.
Right.
You must have life of all the aspects of life together in mm-hmm. order to find balance and to have a successful life and successful spirituality.
Just seems like it's a little superficial to say as long as she's hot. Otherwise, she's not of much use.
Well, that is true of the Dalai Lama or leaders. I myself am incredibly handsome.
I was going to ask, are you hot?
Way hot.
Yeah.
Really?
And it's true. And so if the Buddhist are looking upon me, it must be pleasing for sight for them to have.
Oh, right. You think so? That's interesting.
And they are more receptive to words coming out of attractive face than Kali Fiorina.
what does she have to do with anything?
She's so ugly. Donald Trump told me that.
Yeah, he has mentioned that.
Do you know Donald Trump?
Oh, Donald Trump and I are very also friends. Good.
Oh dear.
That's a surprise.
We get together sometimes to talk about life and hair.
Life really?
And hair.
Yes, his hair. It's one of God's many mysteries.
It certainly is. You're right about that.
I will not rest until I get to the bottom of that hair question.
So, Dalai Lama, you are the 14th of the Dalai Lamas in the Tibetan faith, and the 15th you say could be female. The female biologically has more potential to show affection and compassion. So you acknowledge that maybe there would be an advantage to having a female Dalai Lama as long as she's attractive.
There's no reason why. She cannot be female. Something in religion says that she cannot be female Dalai Lama. Mm-hmm. And I think it's true. From the mothers, of course, have a great capacity for love and forgiveness and compassion.
Right.
But most importantly, she has to be hot. Because, and if it could be big cans. Also,
oh, okay. Dalai Lama.
Yeah, big cans.
Yeah, I'm a boob man.
Right, but look, I'm all in, but it seems like you shouldn't be.
Look, milk of life comes from boobies.
Ooh. Right, well, we understand that, but...
Well, then you should want big boobies like I do.
Right, but again...
And a nice ass would be good.
Really?
What is the point of that, under all that clothing?
Yeah, but, you know... more cushion for pushing. Right? Who's with me?
Well, we just don't expect to hear that coming from a spiritual leader. That's all.
The party don't stop till the ropes drop. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Oh, so great. Now I've got to try to introduce our guest and not embarrass us and not screw up. All right, I'll try. Maybe you know him from the Royal Shakespeare, the Royal National Theater, or perhaps you're more like us and you know him best as Professor Charles Xavier in the X-Men movies or Captain Jean-Luc Picard on Star Trek The Next Generation. Ladies and gentlemen, he is Sir Patrick Stewart in studio with us here on the Kevin Amin Show. Hello, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Bean. That's very kind of you.
We can't believe you're here, and I wonder if you run into that a lot, where people are just, they just have trouble getting words out around you because they're such big fans, they can't believe they're meeting you in person.
Yeah, that does happen. I wonder sometimes if it's, you know, the fact that I've done so much science fiction and fantasy that I am associated with actually not being of this world.
You think people are actually afraid of you?
Well, I hope so, because fear is good. You know,
fear
you want to in
respect, right?
Well, but let's get the fear there first.
Okay, good.
The respect will follow after that. And I have to say to people sometimes that the bridge never left stage 8 at Paramount Pictures. You know, it's somewhere there in the basement of the studios, and we didn't fly. We didn't actually go to planet.
But I think also part of it is I think Americans still hold the Brits in great regard. Even though we've broken away from the empire, there is still a mystique about Brits. That I think carries a little weight in the States.
You wish you were us.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
And you regret what happened back in 17.
We apologize. Can we come back now?
No, it was all right. I mean, you just lost out. That was the thing. I mean, things would be so much easier. You're now a new country, which you could have been part of an old country.
I know.
That would have been so much better.
What were we thinking?
You weren't you. You were kind of weirder, older people.
Right? and we've already screwed up this country, so we might as well just go back to England. So, Patrick, so you just turned 75 years old, which we were just marveling at as we saw you walk in, because you're the most fit person in this room right now. And you apparently still love acting. Why? How has it captured your imagination your entire life?
I was not an academic child. My schooling was pretty pathetic. I was always more grown up than I should have been. I never had any wild teenage years until now.
Until now, right.
You know,
I am getting
into all that. And all I ever wanted, from the age of about 10 or 11, all I wanted to do was to be in plays and act, nothing else.
Was there one thing at school that you were in that sold you, like, this makes me know that that's what I want to do?
There was, and it was sold to me by an English teacher, without whom none of this would have happened. And the lovely thing is that only a few weeks ago I picked up the phone and I called his home in England and wished him a happy 90th birthday.
Oh.
This man is still alive.
And he said, "Who the hell are you?"
Well, what he said was, "Patrick, I've been meaning to talk to you for a long time. You're doing too much. You need to take some time." I mean, it was like I was back in the classroom again, you know. Except the funny thing is after I'd been to the palace to get this knighthood, there was a luncheon party, and he was there. I invited him.
Oh, nice.
He said, everybody was asked to make a comment. He said, well, it's very difficult for me, because for the first 5-6 years that I knew Patrick, he called me sir, and now the situation is reversed. Yeah, it's all a little awkward.
And you grew up in Yorkshire, right?
I grew up in the West Riding of Yorkshire, which is the western edge of the county, where it abuts Lancashire, where my good friend Sir Ian McKellen hails from.
That's the most beautiful friendship in the world, the two of you.
Thank you. It's
so charming, your social media presence of the two of you guys just doing the goofiest things together.
Well,
and of course, you've performed together a lot on stage. I mean, you seem like just sincerely best friends.
We are, but it happened very slowly and over a long period of time. And in fact, we have X-Men to thank for that, because, you know, with movies like that, you do spend much, much more time in your trailer than you do on the set working,
right.
You know, minutes working and hours sitting waiting to work. Well, we had adjoining trailers, and of course, the trailers were quite sumptuous. And so we would hang out hour after hour, and that's how we got to know one another.
Wow.
Did you know this guy? You ever worked with him? How was it when you were in this movie or that? But that kind of conversation. And gradually, we found that we had a great deal in common, our love of Shakespeare, our love of the theater. We are both Northerners, although from different sides of the Pennines. And it took off, finally, when we did this production of Waiting for Godot.
Surely you crossed paths before, though, right? Throughout your career?
Hardly, no.
Really?
Ian was a star from the very beginning. He was a star when he was still at university. He was spotted by critics doing leading roles when he was at Cambridge. I, on the other hand, was unknown for years and years and years. So we're about the same age. We began our professional careers at the same time. But I saw him from the auditorium, and I admired his work so much. And I would sit there, not only that, but he was so gorgeous.
Yeah.
He was beautiful. And I had lost my hair at 19. I was depressed, thinking that my romantic life was over before it had a chance to begin. That's why I'm enjoying it all now.
We were lucky enough to have Saria McKellen in this studio years ago, and now I feel like we've completed the set by getting you in here now as well. So.
Well, that's right. Nice. You see, you wouldn't have had me in here years ago because nobody knew who the heck I was. But him, it was different.
You mentioned the knighting. If you don't mind me asking, because I'm so fascinated about this, when the queen comes out and knights you, do they still do like what we see in the movies where they put a sword on your shoulder and say some things?
Yes.
Wow. Yes. That's still a thing.
How it happens. I asked the same question the morning that it was about to occur because I thought, you know, that's what they do in movies or in silly comedy shows. No, we actually had a rehearsal. That morning there were 100 people receiving awards of different kinds, but only 2 knighthoods. So the 2 of us were taken into a room and we were rehearsed with someone standing in for the queen. Obviously, she doesn't do rehearsals.
Right, sure.
Which is reasonable, I think so. Yeah. If you're Elizabeth, Queen of England, why should you rehearse? Yeah. There is a padded stool that you kneel on. But the great thing is that on one side of it, it has like part of a banister or a railing so that you can lower yourself. You can hold onto it and lower yourself onto the cushion. Because some people, you know, not quite in the
some knights aren't that spry.
There you go.
Yes. A little older, maybe.
Yeah. However,
now, did you get the sense that Her Majesty had any idea who she was bestowing on, or is he just the reason
Come
I asked
on,
it is because no, the reason I asked it is because President Obama goes into rooms every day to hand out a ribbon to some kid, and he doesn't know or care why they're there. I'm just wondering, did the Queen talk to you about you? Like, did she have questions or comments, or is it just she reads a script and then you're done?
Did she say we don't enjoy the Borg? Did she say that at all?
Well, you know, I have had a secret suspicion. It's partly because of a look in his eye that although the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh probably didn't watch Star Trek The Next Generation, I am pretty certain that Prince Charles, the Prince of Wales, did. And he has that look of, oh, I so much want to say, oh, I love that episode. But he never has. Actually, I'm sure the President is briefed. I'm not sure that you would brief Her Majesty over 100 people.
Only 2 got the knighthood.
Only 2 got the knighthood, and we were up first. We were the first. They kind of do it in descending order. And she spoke with every single person. Wow. Each one of those 100, she was on her feet. I think she was 86 at the time. She was on her feet all that time and had a few words with each recipient. With me, she said, which kind of, I guess, answers the question, she said, and how long have you been doing this? and the temptation to say, Your Majesty, do you mean standing here talking to you? Because I've only just arrived. But here's a funny thing that happened that morning. When I'd got, you know, we did the thing, I knelt, I got... Suddenly, she had this sword in her hand, and I have no idea where it came from. There was an equerry standing nearby. He must have given it to her. But it happened so fast. Suddenly, I'm kneeling, and I'm looking along the length of this blade. Wow. And, yes, one shoulder, and then she flips the blade over, and with the other side of the blade touches you on the other shoulders. Uh-huh. What she doesn't say is, "Arise, Sir Knight." I think that's only from American movies.
Or Excalibur. Remember that from Excalibur?
Did I say that in the next show? Somebody did,
I think.
Well, isn't she too old to give the cutlery and ask her to just handle it around people's heads, you know? I'm concerned about that.
You mean health and safety?
Yeah!
Well, I didn't think of that as all I was concerned about was not falling over.
Yeah.
That's all you don't want to do. So then I stood, and there is a lovely, beautiful ribbon with a medal at the end, which also goes around your neck. Then she asked me this question, and I did say, well, for more than 50 years, Your Majesty. And then our conversation was pretty much over. But you have to walk backwards away from her. This is a little bit of ritual
that's true.
Is a touch archaic. Certainly when you leave a room, I believe you walk backwards all the time until you get to the door, then you can turn around.
That's where I would have been afraid I was going to fall.
Well, it involved going backwards down some steps, too.
Oh my God.
Very, very tricky.
Sounds treacherous.
That's why you rehearse.
Okay.
But then what happened? I went to my seat with my then girlfriend, now my wife, and my brother and his wife, who had come down to the palace. And she had a few words with each person, but they were only a few words. Then a woman got an award for her services to equestrianism.
Okay.
Well, the queen talked her head off.
She likes horses.
She loves
horses. She loves horses.
And they talked and talked. And it was so animated that actually the audience began to giggle. Because
were they looking at her and then looking at you and then looking at her and looking at you?
Well, no. Everybody got it. That at last here was somebody she could talk to.
She was interested
to.
In
I love that. She couldn't get past you fast enough to get the horse lady.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
All right. On the Kevin Abid Show, I often say the voice you're listening to is, I don't even have to say it because you can tell, we're talking to Sir Patrick Stewart here on the Kevin Abid Show. A very quick break, and then we're going to come back and tell you about an outstanding new show debuting August 22nd on Starz. Patrick is the star of it. It is called Blunt Talk. You will love it, and we'll tell you why right after this on K-Rock. Sir Patrick Stewart, our guest on the Kevin Abid Show this Saturday night on Starz. A new show is debuting called Blunt Talk. You can actually watch the first two episodes on Starz.com. That's Starz with a Z.com. We were so happy to see that you were coming back to television, Sir Patrick, and I assume that the answer is the script was just too good to pass up.
Well, initially it was one person. It was Seth MacFarlane. I've been working with Seth for, at that time, 8 or 9 years, playing Avery Bullock on American Dad, and occasional appearances on Family Guy and Ted 1 and 2, and Million Ways to Die in the West, and so forth. And so he's been a friend and a colleague, and I am a huge fan of Mr. MacFarlane. And so when he took me out to lunch and said, listen, how would you feel about doing a half-hour live-action comedy show? I said yes, and that was the end of the discussion.
You didn't ask what it was? Or
no. I just, I said, you know, you're going to be involved? He said, yeah, and that was it. That's all I need to know. But then they brought on board the brilliant Jonathan Ames. Now, Jonathan is executive producer, showrunner, and writer. He wrote maybe 4 of the episodes, but works with a writing team. I'm starting to talk quicker. It's you guys. You all talk so fast that I'm starting to do it now. I'm getting quicker and quicker and quicker. I'm going to slow down. And by the way, one little point. You can just call me Patrick Bean.
I'm not comfortable with that.
You have to be comfortable with it because
Mr. Stewart is as good as I can do.
It's fine to use it once, but then, you know, I'm Patrick.
All right. So, Jonathan Ames created Bored to Death. We talked about that earlier today, which is a wonderful show that we liked so much. And now he has such a quirky sense of humor. And for folks who don't know anything about it, it's set in the world of cable news. And you are playing a Bill O'Reilly type, a Piers Morgan type. Well, you tell us. You tell us about your man, Walter Blunt.
Yeah, he is a newsman with a history in journalism and, by the way, in the British Army as well, which is something which comes up from time to time in the series. He has a nightly cable news show called Blunt Talk. And he's an investigative journalist. He's a little bit in love with controversy, but primarily, his motivation for being in the media is to make the world a better place. He really believes it can be done. He couldn't achieve that as a soldier. In fact, quite the opposite. And most specifically, he loves America, but thinks there is room for improvement. Now, that couldn't possibly be true, of course.
Heresy.
We all know that. But he can. And maybe that's in some way that he overlaps with Pierce a little bit. Because, you know, Pierce had this thing about, you know, you should do this and death penalty and that. All of which I agree with, and so does Walter. So that's his job. And we do see him at his job, sitting behind his desk, interviewing people.
But it's his private life which has taken up a lot of the time of the first season because it is somewhat chaotic.
Yes. You think? It's not a slow start for his private life.
No, it's not. One. I mean, what would you say? 4 minutes into the first episode, there is a certain activity going on.
Someone's being tasered, yes.
Well, someone's being tasered,
after,
yes.
Yeah.
Which is
you're hitting the sauce pretty good minute one. I know that much at the bar right away.
Hitting the sauce.
Yes.
Now, there's a phrase I've never heard before. Well, it's a euphemism, of course.
Of course.
So he's... I mean, let me repeat what I have said several times before. I have done things on camera this year that I would not do alone in a locked, darkened room. and again and again, I would say on when we were about to shoot a scene to the crew, ladies and gentlemen, never done this before. This is a first.
Even at this stage in your career and all the things that you've done, do you find there are moments, especially in this show, where a commitment is so important to an actor, that you find yourself really having to push yourself through those barriers to be able to let go and do those things? Because, as you mentioned, some of the things are sort of embarrassing and out of character.
I mean, I had never played a post-coital love scene before. That was the first. Now, you expect all actors to have done at least one of those.
Sure.
No, I reached 74. And that was the first time. I mean, not in life, you understand.
No, of course.
Right. No, in your career.
The thing is, from the first time, the first moments, I wanted to be an actor, and I had a stage experience. The great attraction was that I was not being myself. I could hide, I could lose myself in another character, living in another world, because my childhood was a bit sort of chaotic itself. And I felt secure on stage. I never had stage fright. I never felt embarrassed standing in front of all
those
people.
That's where you felt the most secure.
Yeah. Not just secure, safe.
Mm.
Nothing bad could happen to me while I was on stage. And,
until you got this show.
Oh, well, you know, I am holding you guys at arm's length at the moment. Not you, Ali.
Thank you.
As close as you like.
Well, there is a fearlessness to this performance, as Walter Blunt, that I just find so engaging and refreshing and enjoyable.
That's lovely. Thank you. Fearlessness. That yes.
You that go full bore for it, and it enhances the comedy and the sense of camaraderie that everyone in the cast has. But I was just, as I watched the first two episodes, I said, wow, Patrick is just really fearless in this role. It's just joyful to watch.
You know, it's easier to do that when you're surrounded by great performers who are also lovely people, because it means you've got a net. You know, nothing really bad can happen to you. This is why I've been a company man all my life. A company man in the best sense of that phrase, because it has a pejorative aspect to it as well. To be surrounded by people you like working with, you admire, and you often love. I love all my fellow cast members.
I can't even imagine what that must feel like.
Yeah, we don't experience that on this show.
Can't even imagine. Boy, that sounds like a dream.
I do understand. You guys just need a little bit of help. That's all.
Very damaged.
Let's listen to a clip. Again, we're talking to Sir Patrick Stewart about Blunt Talk. The show debuts this Saturday night on Starz. And as I mentioned, you can see the first two episodes at their website, and you should. This is the scene. We talked about the rough beginning that when we meet Walter Blunt. He's a little bit drunk. He's making the mistake of trying to drive home that way. But then he ends up picking up a hooker. Like you do, I mean, sure. On your way home, right?
She
on
a
Saturday.
She is a goddess and a model.
She's a goddess and a model.
Don't talk about Gisella in those terms, please.
And I think that's the seed we're going to pick it up with you doing a little negotiating in the car.
Great.
I'm a transsexual. Do you know what that means?
Oh, yes. I was at the U.S. Open in 77 when Renee Richards made her debut, but I would never have guessed that of you, which I hope you don't mind me saying.
No, it's okay.
And does that mean that you have an intact...
Why don't we just say I have a 9-inch... Does that bother you?
No. I'm English.
Blunt Talk on Starz. Before we say goodbye...
Let's not say goodbye. Can you stick around?
He's got to be out the door by 40.
No, I'm
we
fine.
Don't have time.
I can't stick around.
He's fine. He's going to stay.
I make the decision. And by the way, I just want to say, in that recording, the role of Giselle was played by Trace Lizette, who is brilliant in the show and comes back.
Oh, good. Excellent. Love that character.
All right, he's going to stick around. We'll be right back.
Our friend comedian Kathy Griffin joins us at 9 this morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show. But in the meantime, how about Sir Patrick Stewart talking about Blunt Talk, premiering this Saturday night on Stars? By the way, I got a question via the Kevin and Bean Twitter account who says, I've been seeing a lot of the promos for Blunt Talk. It shows it looks like a very physical comedy. Are there stunts, and do you get to do your own, Patrick?
There are modest stunts. You've probably seen me standing on the roof of the Jaguar.
Uh-huh.
I had to climb up onto that, which I did without any assistance. I hasten to add.
Did you bring a crane in or anything?
No,
pick you up
yeah.
And lower you?
But you also performed good. Hamlet at the same time, right?
A couple of lines. It was no hardship. And I get to dance in this. Quite a lot of dancing. In fact, that was the first work that I did on this show, was learning the choreography. And there is an almost silent scene. It's physical comedy in an airport bathroom.
Yes.
Which I don't want to talk about because we can't spoil it. But I've never thought I was any good at physical comedy. I can't do pratfalls and stunts and that kind of thing. But the thing about it is, I've been discovering that the more serious you are about what's going on, the potential is there for it to get funnier.
Sure.
And you get more serious and more desperate, and it gets funnier and funnier. And I'm enjoying that aspect. In fact,
it's so interesting to hear you talk as if you're still learning things about acting after a more than 50-year career.
That's exactly how it is, Bean. I'm surrounded by people who are funny and have careers in comedy, and so I ask them, how would you do this? How would you do that? And I'm not quite sure how this works. What would the... 'cause largely the skill is about timing, and so I take advice from them. You know, go to the best if you have to learn something. And I don't think in my job you actually ever stop learning. I think when you do, then you may as well give it up, because nothing interesting is likely to happen.
Speaking of physicality, as I watched you in Blunt Talk, wrapped in a towel, being whipped by your manservant with a wet towel.
Like you do.
Like you
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
It struck me at the age of 75, the remarkable physical condition that you were in.
Thank you.
And I was wondering, are you a fitness buff? Do you work out constantly? Because it's impressive.
2 hours this morning before I came here.
Really? Every
no.
day?
No.
No. See, I would rather hear you say yes than no, because that just means that's just the way you are.
Know,
and that's unfair, and now I don't like you anymore.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry. I take all that back. Yeah, I work out solidly.
All right,
day.
Good. That's what I want to hear.
No, I have what I like to call peasant genes, I think. You know, sturdy, working man gene. My father was always in great shape, and my mother had beautiful skin, and I think it's thanks to them that things turned out sort of okay.
I guess sort of okay. Yeah.
As sad as you were to lose your hair at 19, how great has it been for you since then to be Patrick Stewart and look so good with a bald head?
Well, luckily, in time, of course, it became fashionable, and guys with perfectly good heads of hair were shaving it all off. And back in the old days when I was working in regional theater, where there was never much money going around, I spent a lot of money, more than I could afford, on having a beautiful hairpiece made, really beautiful. And so I would go to auditions wearing it, and then halfway through the audition, I would take it off. And so I would sell myself to these regional theater directors as two actors for the price of one.
Genius.
And because there was never very much money. And in rep, it means that you do a different play every 2 weeks, 3 weeks. At the beginning of my career, I did weekly rep when you put on a new play every Monday night, and that was wild.
Amazing. Speaking of being on the stage, I have to ask, and I know we're almost out of time here, no matter how busy you are with movies and television, and no matter how much money you can make doing those, you always go back to the stage, and you usually go back to Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah, because that was my first love, and it was all I wanted to do. Film and television was an accident.
Pretty good
up over them. Yeah, well,
pretty good accident.
I am not complaining. Believe me, Kevin. I really appreciate everything that happened. But I was never looking for it. It came to me. I mean, I got Star Trek. This is now a well-known story, but I got Star Trek because I was illustrating a lecture at Royce Hall on the UCLA campus for a friend of mine, a professor of English, who was giving a public lecture and wanted me to illustrate it by reading Shakespeare, and signed up for the course of
lectures was a man called Robert Justman, who was one of the executive producers of Star Trek, and he turned to his wife and said, "We found the captain." Well, you can't legislate for things like that happening, yeah. Can you?
That's accident. True.
Amazing. All right. Mr. Stewart has to walk out the door, you guys.
Yep.
No.
Any final thoughts? Any final words before we lose him?
I've enjoyed this so much. I told you when we were off air, live radio is the one thing I love more than anything else. So please ask me back, will you?
Anytime,
How's
sir.
How's tomorrow?
Anytime.
How's tomorrow work for you?
Same time, same place.
Blunt Talk, this Saturday night on Stars. It is so funny. You guys trust us on this. You will love it. How about a big round of applause for our guest, Mr. Patrick Stewart?
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hey! Used to be a party DJ.
Why is this so hard for you to believe?
Bean?
It's K-Rock, by the way, Kevin Bean. You hate people, correct?
I wouldn't say I hate people. I am not a fan of being in crowds. I don't like having a lot of people around me.
What if that crowd is dancing and drinking?
Those are the worst people in the world.
Okay, now, right. You used to DJ... In a club.
That is good. A nightclub. Yeah, that's right. Where people came to dance and drink. I was the guy in
the
booth.
Did you beat mix?
Playing records.
Yeah.
No. Well, where appropriate, if you're playing the right kind of music, yeah, you beat mix when you can. Yeah, but I also played rock and roll as well.
But, Did you take requests? Did you do any entertaining banter in between songs? Everybody say hey, everybody say ho.
I don't believe that. I don't believe I was an everybody say hey, everybody say ho kind of DJ, but I'm sure that there were announcements to be made. I'm sure I did my fair share of dedications. And if you're driving the brown Toyota, your lights are out of the parking lot. I think I would break in for news like that. But look,
what year was this?
Well, I mean, I did it on and off for a number of years, but I think my peak club DJ year was probably 1979.
79.
What? 79, probably, yeah.
Did you go to the same club, or were you a traveling DJ?
I did both. I mean, I was a guy like our DJ Omar Khan here, who did weddings and parties and things like that. I had a mobile DJ system as well. But I also had, there were a couple of clubs that I worked at for some length of time where I was the guy who was there every Friday night, say. And people would come and enjoy it.
Well, this is going to be very exciting for you because we contacted the owner of the nightclub, and he did a search.
What?
And he has some
no.
tape of what Gene Baxter, known as Bean,
no.
did.
How did this survive?
As a DJ.
I don't believe it.
In the club. Listen up.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're having a good time out there tonight. It's a crazy night here at the Plum Smuggler, my favorite nightclub. And let's get this party started. Let's get our... jam on. Or jammies on if you're tired. That was my Sharona. And now I'm looking for those bad girls out there tonight. Any bad girls? Daddy likey. Daddy likey bad girls. I don't see any hands. You know those bad girls? Some of them are le freaks. Like this song.
Nope.
By Chic. Let's all freak out. I'm freaking out now. Look at me. Look at me freak.
Oh, no. But,
you know, the party don't stop till the DJ drops. I feel better now. I've had some glucose. Here's Rod Stewart. Do you think I'm sexy? It should be, do you think I'm sexy? I'm going to write a strongly worded letter to Rod Stewart. I'm upset. Yeah, it's you. Speak correctly, Rod. All right, now it's time for all you cats and kittens out there to get together, put your arms around each other, and show each other how much you love each other. Just like at my house. Where it's Valentine's Day every day. Except on Valentine's Day. That day I reject. Peaches and herb. Of course it could be herb, depending on how you pronounce it. Some people drop the H on herb when they're talking about herbs. But sometimes they say herbs instead. That makes me crazy. It's Gloria Gaynor. I will survive. Donna Summer. She's hot stuff, isn't she? Hot. Ooh, speaking of hot, has anyone had the hotcakes over there at IHOP?
Oh.
I love those. Why do they say things are setting like hotcakes, by the way? I've been to IHOP plenty of times, and
I mean, they sell hotcakes, but it's not like people are waiting in line or anything. So why do they say something like hotcakes? I just think, I don't know, hotcakes don't sell that quickly. All right, let me see, everyone. Put your hands in the air like you just don't care. Of course, if you really didn't care, you probably wouldn't put your hands up. So that's confusing. That's frustrating to me. I just... And when you're spelling out YMCA, as we well dance to this, make sure you... Who's doing the periods? There are periods in between each of those letters. Do the periods. Well, it's time to ring my bell. Would anyone like to ring my bell? Hey, ladies, who wants to ring the DJ's bell?
Oh, no.
All right, then. Let's just ring each other's bells. Folks, that's it for me. I'm GBGBGB Gene Baxter. Hope you had a good time here tonight at the Plum Smuggler. Everyone, just find the love of your life, or at least the love of tonight. And...
I want to party with that guy. I love stuff like this.
Well, 1 minute we're talking to Andy Summers, guitarist for the Police. And right. Then the next minute our producer Dave comes in. He goes, hey, guys, Ludacris is here. You guys want him to stop by? And we're like, hell yeah, we want him to stop by.
What kind of question is that?
So Ludacris is here.
Yeah, man.
How are you, Luda?
I'm good, man. I'm humbled at how popular I am sometimes.
You're very popular, especially this week with a brand new album that just came out on Tuesday called Ludaversal and a brand new film that we've all been waiting for in theaters everywhere tomorrow, including IMAX, by the way, called Furious 7. Now, was this
man.
On purpose that you dropped the album the same week as the movie was coming out, figuring you were going to be out doing promotion anyway? Why not hit them both?
It kind of, exactly. I definitely did, man. And it actually just worked out that way also. So, you know, like the album was done. We had finished with all the clearances and it just so happened to be the same time that they were releasing the movie. So what better way to promote the movie than to also say I have an album, man. And I just want to say to you guys, man, people always ask me what they would be surprised about Ludacris that they don't know. And I love the format of this station and the music that you guys play.
You do.
You know, I love different genres of music, and I'm a music lover. It's just because somebody does rap music doesn't mean that's all they listen to. I know some people think that, and that's a stereotype. But, like, I would say that Red Hot Chili Peppers is one of my favorite bands, and Scar Tissue, one of my favorite songs,
hey, look,
Mumford & Sons, and all that good stuff, man.
I got to tell you, when we started, it was very different. When we started, there was a lot of people that would say, you guys talk about this, you talk to only this type of artist, and now it just doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly, because people appreciate music, which brings me to my next point. People who only listen to the music on this station, buy the Ludacris album on iTunes. I guarantee you, you're going to love, like, if you never even listen to rap music, or you don't even have too much rap in your iPod or whatever, or your phone, try this out, and I guarantee you won't be disappointed. It's called Ludaversal, man.
Let me ask you this question, Ludacris, and this comes up from time to time, particularly when we have rappers on.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard to have a significant, long-running rap career where the quality maintains? Very few rappers are able to come out strong and then still be strong 15 years later. It seems to be such a short period of time that people are down with it. You know what I mean?
That is such a great question, because we may be able to learn something from each other today, because rappers think the same thing about rock and roll artists. Unless, you know, you have those chosen few that last the ages, but we're always like, these rock and roll and different genres, they only have one or two albums in them, and then they go, and then they just tour for the rest of their lives.
It's a universal problem of staying relevant and staying good.
But to answer your question, I think that, you know, this is the great answer for your question. They call it the music business for a reason. So it's 90% business and 10% music, and I think a lot of the people don't understand that, and a lot of these rappers don't have their business taken care of right. So it may not be necessarily that they're making the wrong music, they just have completely messed their contracts up, and then it starts getting to their head, and then from there it just all goes downhill, and you know, people are taking their money and all that type stuff.
How did you learn the business side of this,
man? I was reading a books, like one was called Everything You Need to Know About the Music Industry.
Really?
Before I got signed. So I knew it was all about the business, and I think that's part of the reason of why I have longevity and consistency.
So you bought Rappers for Dummies and then just hit the road.
Exactly. Ready. That's exactly what I did, man, because the best way to infiltrate the system is to pretty much at least understand all of the jobs that are around you and surrounding what it is that you're doing. So you have to be strategic and you have to be very intelligent about that, man.
I would pay for seminars
Ludacris.
Same. Ludacris TED Talk. That's what you
right?
need.
Yeah. Same.
There you have it, man. You got to love it, man. You got to have your business taken care of.
The new album is called Ludiversal. It's out this week, as we mentioned. You have done a lot of acting over the last 15 years in lots of varied projects. You always come back to Fast and Furious. Why do you not get tired of making these movies?
Man, you know why? Because every time I read the script, I'm sitting here trying to figure out how in the hell are we going to top what we just did. And as long as my character is evolving and progressing and the script seems to be getting crazier and crazier with these ludicrous stunts, no pun intended, then I'm all down for it, man. And that's pretty much the answer to your question.
And you're kind of the comic relief, which is fun to play in the films.
Yeah.
But these stunts, I mean, at some point they can't top it. You can't. I mean, when you start to have an airplanes dropping cars and cars going out of skyscrapers, at some point there's nowhere bigger to go.
Right. But that's what I was saying on the last one. Yeah. And then we're reading the script and seeing a car jump from one building to the next, and you know, seeing skydiving out of a plane in cars. I'm just like, how in the hell are we gonna make this happen? But that's my point. It just keeps getting crazier and crazier.
But does that scare you a little bit?
Hell yeah.
It starts to sound cartoonish. Oh, yeah, we're going to jump out of a skyscraper with a car.
It does, but every time I go to the movie theater and I sneak in, you start realizing that even as crazy as these stunts are, this is what people go to the movie theaters to see. They want to see it. That's what it is.
If it's done well, no question.
It's escapism. It's therapy. That's exactly what people want that theatrical experience for, because it gives you that blood rush, you know?
I have a friend that saw it last night.
Yeah.
And he posted on Instagram before he went in, I haven't seen the previous ones. Can't wait to see it. And his Instagram lit up. He was being verbally berated by people. And then he came out of the movie, posted again, and said, that was the best ever. I'm going to go home and just binge watch. But it's one of those movies that you don't have to have all the backstories. It's just going to blow your mind.
It is. And you know what's crazy is that, you know, I came up in the era where these Star Trek and Star Wars fans were all down the corner, you know, when this movie come out. And now Fast and Furious is exactly that. Tonight, for this midnight screening, I guarantee you on the news, and you guys will be reporting tomorrow about some craziness that has happened
tonight. I'm sure we will.
You know, so.
Are you going someplace tonight?
I am, man. You know, I definitely want to go sneak into some theaters because that's the joy of being an actor in great movies, is when you get to sneak in and get the real reaction from audiences.
Which one?
Which
that's
one?
Not,
which one
are you going to? That's not sneaking if he tells you it's not.
I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Sneaking to movie theaters. That's
I'm sure
the point.
You have seen the reviews, and every critic is saying this is the best in the franchise by far, which, you know, it's tough to get good reviews for an action film. People who write those things seem to be predisposed to just discount those movies as being no good, but yours is hitting all the buttons here.
I agree. You know what it is? They used to trash Fast and Furious. And we're just being, you know, we're being very, very honest here. And
the critics used to?
The critics used to trash it. However, once you get to 5 and 6 and 7 and the movies keep making more and more money and these fans become more and more loyal to it, and it's almost like you were just saying, the guy that, you know, the fans were berating him because he said he hadn't seen the other ones. It almost puts the pressure on critics themselves, because at a certain point you start looking like just a hater. You know what I mean? So I think that it's a good thing that we continue to build and progress. And the last one did like $800 million. So we're feeling like we're going to break $1 billion on this one. And because of the Paul Walker situation, and this is leaving his, you know, this is his legacy. Mm-hmm. And this is his last movie. And the way that it is done, I don't want to give the movie away, but in terms of how we creatively end this movie is the best possible way that can honor him and pay homage to him.
Of course, depressing but scary moment as to what to do, how to do it.
It was extremely scary because this movie almost didn't see the light of day. And, you know, he was about 80% done with the parts in his movie before his untimely death. And they shut down production for 4 to 5 months.
Wow.
And everybody was in the mourning process. And we didn't even know we were going to get called back. We thought it was a done deal.
So that just wasn't going to happen.
Exactly. So, you know, once we did get the call back, we realized and we read exactly what it was that they were trying to do. And, man, we were all for it because, you know, with him finishing 80%, we all were like, he definitely would have wanted us to finish this. And
sure.
Just as long as the integrity is kept and everything is right. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, I will tell you, as sad as that was for all of us, as you know, as movie fans and also just as human beings, to see somebody, you know, lose somebody that young. The cast members in this film, it wasn't just like this was a guy you worked with at the office. I mean, you guys were legitimate friends, and yeah. I know how hard it was for you. And of course, we all know how hard it was for Michelle and for Jordana and everybody. And we've heard them talk so much about what a loss it is in their lives to have him gone.
It really is, man. And what you just said is one of the most important things of why I feel like this franchise is so popular and so successful. Is because any other movies that I've been on, you know, when the camera and everybody else cut, people go their separate ways. They go to their separate trailers. They go to their separate homes. We literally, like, not only individually, but as a family, like, we really are family. We go hang out with each other. Our kids hang out with each other. I'll go over Vin's house sometimes, and sometimes I go over Tyrese's house, and sometimes it's the three of us, and I go hang with Michelle Rodriguez. And you would be surprised at how much each individual hangs with each other. Mm-hmm. Off that's camera.
That
and
seems
that's what it
super
is.
Rare.
And that's what I'm telling
seems
you.
Seems super rare.
Absolutely.
We knew we were going to have Andy Summers from The Police. We didn't know we were going to have Ludacris today.
Amazing.
And it's a great, great surprise.
Man,
tell us about your new album.
Man, the new album, Ludiversal, this is my eighth studio album. So like you said, man, I'm glad to be one of the rappers that are in that category of put the elite amount of members that can put out that many. But for anybody that loves or has heard any Ludacris song ever in your life, this is something that you definitely want to check out because it is some of my greatest work, my most vulnerable time. I'm spilling my heart out on these songs. So,
More than any other time?
Yeah, man.
Any other album?
Absolutely, because it's just a maturity thing. And before, I wasn't comfortable talking about certain subjects, but now it's like I'm opening my personal life. So with music, especially rap music, it is it's kind of like a narrative, and it has to be educational and teach you about what's going on in the world and more money, more problems. You know, if you just want to get a perspective on life and it's very interesting, then definitely check out this Ludiversal album, man.
And check out Furious 7 in theaters everywhere tomorrow. Ludacris, yeah. You're the man, man.
Thank
Get it
you
done.
Guys,
thanks
man.
So much for stopping by. We really enjoyed it.
Now I got to come back sometime,
all
man.
Right,
I
man.
Enjoyed it.
I haven't seen the video yet, Kevin. Have you? That is up at krock.com of beer mug pole dancing?
I have, yeah. He went to the pole dancing championships.
Mm-hmm.
And he interviews people, and he does some moves on the pole. Quite sexy.
He's really pretty sexy.
Shirt on or shirt off?
On, but it barely matters anymore.
That's true. He is busted out.
That's a good point. Anyway, you can go to kevinabean.com or krock.com, and you can see the video of Beer Mug interviewing the girls and also attempting a little pole dancing of his own. Again, that's up at krock.com. This could be one of the final Kevin and Bean shows, I'm sorry to say. I know a lot of people, you know, from time to time we'll hear from people that go, God, you guys have been on since I was a little kid. How much longer can it go? Well, the answer, my friends, is not much longer. And it's not because we are looking forward to leaving you. It's because the company is looking forward to us leaving them. At least that's the impression I'm getting lately.
Well, here's what happens is about every 3 or 4 years, they have another meeting that you have to go to. And then they go, oh, and by the way, everything you guys are doing is wrong.
Yes.
And it's always retroactive. They never tell us ahead of time. So they just go, this word, that word, these things. You can't do that. You can't do this.
Yeah.
And basically, we sat in a meeting last week where we were the bad example at least 50% of the time.
And not only the bad example, you are the bad example company-wide.
All right. Take it easy.
For the country. I know. So this traveling circus of attorneys goes all over the country, and they go into conference rooms in Cincinnati or Seattle, and they go, all right, don't be like Kevin and Bean, whatever you do.
That's
we're
the
poster
message.
Children.
Yes,
yes, exactly. So when you say the words, so in other words, because we do a show where we're not announcers and we talk like regular people talk, and we'll call someone an asshole if he's an asshole. Oops, sorry.
Well, that's a good example.
Because that's the type of thing that we've been saying our entire radio career, and now they come and go, oh, you guys didn't know you're not allowed to use the A word anymore.
And we've sat in these meetings before where we say, okay, we're not describing a body part, which can be dicey.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
is you're calling somebody a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
So from my understanding up until this point, as long as you're using it that way, it's fine.
Sure.
Nope.
But you can call them a dick.
Nope.
No.
No, you can't do that either.
All right, by the way, we had that one clarified as well. But we're not saying the body part. We're saying that they're an a-hole, which, sorry. So I don't exactly know what's going on, but I do feel like there is some groundwork being laid down for us to go away.
I do too. And we asked Dave for some clarification if he could get us somebody that would be willing to come on the air. And apparently one of the attorneys with K-Rock is named Leonard Burdett. I've not met Mr. Burdett, but he joins us on the phone on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hi, Mr. Burdett. How are you, sir? Hello, sir.
Yes. Hello.
Hi, it's Kevin and Bean. Our producer Dave lined you up to speak with us on the air this morning.
Oh, I'm very aware.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us. Were you,
You started off by using objectionable language, and that's part of the problem that we here at CBS have with you.
Which part?
You used a term for hello that can be also applied as a euphemism for drug use.
Oh, so hi.
Please don't say that again.
But, I mean, is it the more common use of that word, hello? I mean...
Hello, yes, that's the word we prefer.
But what
to
I'm
use.
Saying is hi. Excuse me,
no,
I'm sorry.
Please don't say that.
Okay.
That infers some sort of drug use, and okay. CBS cares.
I've heard that.
We don't want our listeners to think in any way we endorse drug use of any kind.
Oh, please. They listen to this show.
That was not our intention at all, by the way, so we apologize. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing wrong? And is Kevin right that you guys are basically just trying to figure out a way to fire us?
No, that's not the case at all. We're hoping you'll resign.
What about all these?
I don't see
why
that's so funny.
Well, it's funny because it's true. What about all these words that we were told last meeting were fine to use, but now you're coming at us and saying we can't use them?
Well, first of all, we never let you use those words. Those are words you just would take it upon yourself to use, and I don't know if I mentioned this, but CBS cares.
I don't.
We want our listenership to know that we are a family corporation, and we support wholesome entertainment. And the two of you have been at cross purposes with really what CBS has been shooting up for many years.
Okay, but Mr. Burdett, we were told in the meeting last week that we are no longer allowed. Not that we do this very often, but every once in a while somebody burps. We were told.
No, please don't even use the word.
Okay, but people have been doing that on the radio for 40 years.
Can you not hear the buzzer? Is that the problem?
But I'm not saying it. I'm not saying it. I'm not doing it.
You're talking about it.
We're not allowed to talk about it?
Don't even think about it. In fact, don't burp ever. Oh, I just said it. Now you've got me doing it.
I don't know if you
don't
can
expel any sort of gaseous admission from your throat or mouth.
But, sir, it's 2015.
Please don't tell anyone what year it is.
What are you talking about?
We don't want to offend anyone who loves the 90s.
I know a guy like that.
Sure you do.
Oh, wait, I think he hates the 90s.
We all. Well, we don't want to offend him either. Let's be year neutral if we can, please, and allow people to believe it's any year they want to believe it is.
Okay. You're making this job very difficult for us, sir.
That's the idea, yes.
Here's our problem, is that it's not possible to make everyone happy at all the time. This isn't possible.
You heard me, Leonard.
You understood me, Leonard.
I don't think you quite know what your problem is.
You mind if I take another run at that?
I would appreciate it, yes.
You can't make everybody happy.
CBS cares.
You can't make everybody happy.
We'd like the listeners to understand what you're saying.
You can't make everybody happy.
You can't, that's for sure.
Well, I'm saying I don't think anyone can.
Well, we here at CBS, I don't know if I mentioned this, CBS cares.
You mentioned it. Yeah. Okay.
And it's our goal to make every single listener happy. And by happy, I mean not unhappy. And so if there's anything that could possibly be found objectionable by anyone, we need to eliminate that from our airwaves.
Again, I don't think that's possible.
Well, you're going to have to change your attitude, mister, because you work for us, okay? And I need you to really try. And you guys have not yet tried it our way. Let's try it our way for a while. We've tried it your way, and it's not gone so well.
Okay.
So let's try to clean up our act. Be a little bit more positive, a little bit more friendly, clean up the language, clean up the content, and I think we'll all be better off in the long run.
F you, Leonard.
I would
think it went well.
Really?
I'm happy with how it ended.
Really?
Yep.
Again?
Yep.
Again with the hanging up? Again?
There was nothing left.
How many times?
There was
that's not the
left.
Point. That's not the point.
And that's not for you to decide.
It is for me to decide, and that is the point.
All right, here's what happened. While you were listening to The Killers, Kevin turned out to be the killer of conversation because, once again, he hung up on a guest who was, granted, we were at the end of the conversation.
Right,
the guest was in the process of saying goodbye.
But he already said goodbye. He did. He said goodbye. Then I said goodbye.
Do we have the tape? Can we go back to the Joel Edgerton tape?
Yeah, give us a second. We have
Chip has like 17 others ready.
Well,
to go.
because it's you have a long history of hanging up on our guests, and as we always ask every time we have this conversation, is what's your rush and what's the downside of letting them finish?
My rush is, hey, all right, good to talk to you. Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for calling. All right, have a good day.
You too.
All right, we'll see you later. Okay.
But it
and it goes on for like an hour.
It rarely goes to that extent, Kevin. The guy was basically just saying so long.
All right, here's Joel Edgerton.
And it's always fun to catch up with you on the Kevin Bean Show. We appreciate you calling.
Oh, man, thank you very much. I look forward to you to see the film because I think it's outdone felony. I really do.
Fantastic. Thank you, Joel.
Thanks, man. Have a great
day. Summertime.
All right, so... So I said, he said goodbye. I said, thanks. And he said, thanks.
Have a great day.
Allie, look me up on Facebook.
That's what he was going to say?
Yes.
How do we know that?
Because he had just talked about being on Facebook. Maybe he was going to say that.
Fantastic. Thank you, Joel.
Thanks, man. Have a great
day. It was a little quick. The point is, we don't know what he was going to say. And the further point
he was going to say, have a great day. That's what he was going to say because he was done.
Allie, call me. You don't know.
Right?
But the important thing is, how many times do we have to say this? Think about what it's like for the person on the other end of the phone when they're still talking and they hear.
Well, I mean, that has happened at times, and it's not on purpose. But
it's happened a few times since I got here.
Yeah.
I haven't been here that long.
It's an ongoing problem.
Apparently, we've pulled a bunch of clips.
Oh, good. I will enjoy this then.
Now, tell me about Corby Brand.
This is a guy that we talked to. If I remember, he lived in Portland, and he ran a church based on superheroes. He said a lot of things that superheroes do are just good advice to live a healthy life, and he had people coming down and worshiping at his church. We had him on.
And I think it ended well.
Corby Brand is our guest. You can find him at Church of Superheroes at Facebook. Thanks for the time, Corby. Good luck to you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Have a great what, Kevin?
Time? Day?
See, you don't know. You don't know.
But I'm saying either word, one or the others.
Or none.
He said, thanks, guys. That's also a goodbye, right?
Not if you have more words following it.
A half a second, Kevin. That's all we're asking is a half a second. Do you think somehow all these people that you hang up on the course of your entire career, at the end of it, you can look back and go, but look at the 10 seconds I saved.
You put
it all together.
I saved some time on that.
All right, who's next?
Megan Fox.
Oh, Megan Fox. How do you hang up on Megan Fox? Thanks, Megan. Have a great weekend.
Right. Thank you, bye. She said thank you. See, they can't hear that the phone disconnects, right? Because they're talking. So she says thank you, and she feels like it just went fine.
So you're doing them a favor.
She's super happy about it.
You can tell when you're on the phone if somebody's hung up on you, Kevin. And by the way, let me just say this in particular about Megan Fox. If you're lucky enough to have a job where you have Megan Fox on the phone,
right?
Why are you in a hurry to end that?
Playing hard to get. I just made that up.
All right, who's the tiny star that's up next?
The tiny star that's up next is Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney!
I mean, technically he was done as well, but I guess let's listen to it.
I don't know if we'll ever have a chance to do this again, Sir Paul, but thank you so much for the time. It's a real honor to have you on the program today.
That's a really nice interview. So, I hope to see you at the gig.
Absolutely, sir. Thanks for the call.
Let's make it a date.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye. See you guys. Bye.
Oh, that one hurt.
Okay, but he said, see you guys. That's a goodbye.
He had more, Kevin.
You don't know.
I do, because you cut him off during the more.
See you guys, but before I hang up, let me tell you the secret of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band that I've never told anyone is the words that could have been coming out of his mouth.
Right, but what are the chances of that?
We'll never know.
But you'll never know. One day, Paul McCartney's going to be dead, and you're going to think, we could have found out the secret to Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band if I'd just not hung up on the man on the phone.
Brooke Shields hurt. I'll give you that. Brooke Shields.
I will say.
Brooke Shields was very painful.
I was driving in my car when I heard this, and I was dying laughing.
Yeah. Because, if I recall correctly, she was telling us that she listens to our show all the time.
Huge fan.
Yeah.
Huge fan.
And then I cut her off. This is with the commercial at the end.
Oops.
That's part two of Paul.
He was saying goodbye.
He was, and I stand by that. All right, here we go.
Follow Ms. Shields on Twitter, @BrookeShields. Hey, thanks for the time. We enjoyed it.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you, guys. I
it's
listen
Serena's
when I'm
Hollywood Square's two-week Black Friday sale going on now.
Okay, that one is actually a little painful because she was being so nice. And you hear the life sucked out of her in her voice. She's like, hey, I listen all the time. Okay, great.
Do it again.
That was painful.
And by the way, and this wasn't a case where you're going to argue that she literally was just saying bye.
No, this
like,
one.
That's not the only word that we cut
the
off.
The other ones were great, and I stand by them. This was painful.
Follow Ms. Shields on Twitter, at Brooke Shields. Hey, thanks for the time. We enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
It's Serena's Home Square's two-week Black Friday sale. Going on now.
Okay, so then we isolated her without the commercial.
Okay.
Just so that you could hear her die a little bit.
Hear how sad she is.
This hurts, too.
Follow Ms. Shields on Twitter, at Brooke Shields. Hey, thanks for the time. We enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. I listen when I'm in L.A. I listen to you guys.
That's so sad. What's your hurry? Why are you in such a hurry?
Because we said thank you and she said thank you guys. Now, isn't that a normal ending?
Yes. All right. It is. But, again, what's the downside?
Just follow me on Twitter, at Brooke Shields. Hey, thanks for the time. We enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. I listen when I'm in L.A. I listen to you guys.
Aww. You hear her soul.
Her soul died a little bit right there.
What about Bono, mother effer? What about Bono?
He was done.
Again with the he was done.
He was finished. We didn't need to.
Sir, great to talk to you. We'll see you again in a little bit, all right?
We feel the same about you. Really do, K-Rock. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The world's biggest
band, the smallest club they've played now, but in my defense there, we went into his song.
That doesn't matter. He's let him say, see you, Kevin, see you, Bean, and whatever else he was going to say after that.
What do you think he was going to say after that?
We'll never know.
And then
we'll never know.
And then there was Joel Edgerton. So that happened as well a couple minutes ago, yeah.
And it's always fun to catch up with you on the Kevin and Bean Show. We appreciate you calling.
Oh, man, thank you very much. I look forward to you to see the film because I think it's outdone selling it. I really do.
Fantastic. Thank you, Joel.
Thanks, man. Have a great one.
Summertime is time for the 2015.
I'm happy with that one. That went well.
Kevin, God damn it.
Brooke Shields is the only one that hurt my soul and her soul and all of our souls.
Yeah.
So I apologize for that.
The band is called Churches. Their album is out now called Every Open Eye. Maybe you just were lucky enough to see them at the Shrine on Saturday night, and they are here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, bright and early. Churches are here. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
What a pleasure to meet you guys.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us. We're not really
We love Scottish people.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Ooh. I feel like every second person we meet in North America is like, I'm Scottish. I'm like, where are you? We don't know.
That's like people in Scotland saying that they're Irish. We're just the same.
Wait, so a lot of people say that they're Scottish when they're not?
Well, I think they mean that they have heritage.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, from many
to say
years
you're
ago.
Scottish is a very different thing. And no Braveheart references, please.
Okay. Does it seem to you guys like it has happened fast for you? I know you put in a lot of work. You've certainly paid your dues. But to be where your band is now, as popular as you are, after only being together for 4 years, I think a lot of groups would look at that and go, man, how do they do it?
You know, it's one of those things that I think at the very beginning, and because of the internet, and because of the way that we kind of came to people's attention, it did feel all very fast. And those kind of that first 6 months was overwhelming in some ways for us. But I think once we got signed and we started recording music and we were working towards making a record, it all seemed way more kind of known to us and way more rhythmic. And after that, we really just threw ourselves into the day-to-day of being in the band. I think it helps not to look too far forward with this stuff. Otherwise, that's where you can be overwhelmed, you know?
At what point do you stop dealing with people who have never heard of you? You know what I mean? Where you're having to introduce yourselves and your music to new people. Have you reached that point yet or no?
Yes, I think we're introduced to new people all the time. Yeah, it's one of those things where initially it was the internet community, and then suddenly you maybe bump into someone on the street and they'd be lovely and you'd have a nice conversation. But now I think we can feel the band getting bigger out here. I think it's one of those ones where we came here the first time it was 500 capacity shows, then the second time it was 700. Now it's 5,000 sometimes, and sometimes it's 3,000. And we can feel the band expanding in a very natural way, but we did this in a real... We could all come from alternative backgrounds, you know, rock band backgrounds. I know what it's like to tour this country in a van and have no one at the show. I have more people on stage than at the show, you know. So when when you get to the level that you're playing these gigs and you can feel the audience expanding in a natural way, there's nothing more rewarding than that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. What keeps you going when there is fewer people in the audience than on stage?
Whiskey?
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Intoxication.
We're talking to the band Churches here. They're going to be performing live in the Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock in a few minutes as well. I had a question especially for you, Lauren, and that is, and I've heard you mention this in interviews before, people have gotten into your background about how you're so much better educated than the rest of us with your various degrees, including in journalism. And I always wonder, having done this side of the job, what do you wish people would ask you about Churches more often that they don't? What's left out when you sit down to do an interview that we should be asking?
Well, I think for me, the best interviews that we've done or the best interviews that I've done as a writer are ones that are just kind of a conversation, and the angle of what you're doing is informed by a conversation with someone. And, you know, we're very lucky that the media have been so nice to us, but you do answer the same set of questions all the time. And sometimes when you give someone an answer, they just take the answer and move on to the next question, if that makes sense. They don't really make it into a conversation in any way. And, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's when you learn things you didn't know before about people, when you take a conversation to a different place rather than the, what was it like recording? Did you feel a lot of pressure? Why the V? And stuff like that. But generally, we've had a very good experience so far, so we're quite lucky, I think.
That's a question we don't get asked very often, though. So
what you would ask yourselves?
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. Okay. I've been so sweating this interview. All right, I'm going to say something now that you haven't heard in many other interviews that I hope is going to make you happy, and that is later on today on the Kevin and Bean Show, in this very room in which we are sitting, Dave Gahan is going to be joining us.
No way.
How about that?
Say hi for
how you like us now?
Huge fans.
Whoa. Yeah, we really couldn't contain our excitement there, could we? we all lost it a little bit there.
We're kind of the same way. You know, we've been lucky. Kevin and I have been doing this job for a long, long time. So we have been literally interviewing Depeche Mode for 25 years. Right. So, I mean, we're still excited when they come, but we're kind of over the stage fright part of it. You know what I mean? The that you get. And I'm wondering, do you now, with all the festivals that you play and the shows that you're on with other acts, have you encountered that a lot where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe we're in the same room as.
Yeah, with those guys. We did a bunch of shows with them a couple of summers ago, and we got to meet a couple of the guys, Martin and Andy, and we were just like, oh my, we were so starstruck. It was crazy. But we're trying to be cool, you know, we're all musicians here.
Sure.
It's fine, you know.
Yeah. Do you think you're able to pull that off?
Yeah, I think we're getting all right.
Trying to be cool and
not
too geeked.
I don't.
You don't
maybe
think so?
Ian thinks in his heart that he covered it up.
I'm really cool right now, guys. I'm really cool.
Some people more so than others. You know, when you see people at festivals and you see people all summer, that's one thing. Mm. I did run into a member of Radiohead recently, and I could not contain myself.
Yeah. You were hilarious.
I was 16 again. I was freaking out. I was sweating. I was like, what am I going
to
say?
Were you thinking to myself, stop saying, stop talking, stop talking like that?
Yeah.
That's usually what happens.
I love stories like that because, I mean, you guys have the same job. You do the same thing every day that the guys in Radiohead do or the guys in Depeche Mode do, but it seems
so
different to you. But the funny thing is they feel the same way about somebody else, too. You know, and it's just like an endless circle of admiration, I guess.
I wish you were around last week when you could have given me a pep talk. That would have been much better.
All right, last question. When you talk about those kinds of heritage bands that we've mentioned, do you guys, and I know you said earlier, Ian, you don't want to look too far ahead, but, I mean, do you think, wow, the legacy? I mean, imagine what it would be like to do this as a job for the next 25 years. You ever think that in those terms?
You try not to think about those things because they can very easily take your eye off the ball. We're very much focused on what's going on today and then next week and then looking at the tour schedule and trying to give that all the attention that we can. But at the same time, yeah, of course you dream. You know, of course, you have to. I mean, that's the whole reason that any of us got into the music business in the first place or learned the guitar or, you know, started a band in high school, which is, I mean, I think we all did that. Mm. And you don't ever think for a minute that any of it could be a reality or even that we could get this far. Mm. So every day, that, you know, I'm thankful for where we're at, but, you know, once in a while it's all right to look forward.
You don't have the vision when you're younger, I imagine, of thinking that your band will do anything other than, you know, your little area right there.
Right.
How could it possibly
expand to the rest of the world, right?
I think when you're young and stupid, though, you think you can be bigger than you too. I see myself. San Siro Stadium.
Do you know what?
Bono up, you know.
One of those things, so 14 to 16, of course, yeah, we're the next U2. Right?
Conquer the world, right?
Right, right. 16 to 18, not so much. But then 18 to kind of 23 was when I was started playing shows in Glasgow. And then you start running into people from Orange Juice, or you start, or Franz Ferdinand, or Bella Sebastian, and you start to realize that people who hang out in the same places that you do, live in the same area that you do, have achieved some level of global success, and that is so inspiring. That's really energizing when you can see that on a day to day. You think, well, if that guy can do it, well, why shouldn't we? Like, at least try. We have to try. And that's the kind of mentality that spurs it, you know, the can-do attitude, you know, that spurs it on.
Well, it's working for your band, and we are big fans of yours here at K-Rec. As you know, we played a number of your tracks, you know, from the first record and from this record as well. The new album is great, you guys. It's called Every Open Eye. It is available everywhere right now. We're going to walk you down the hall into the Red Bull Sound Space, and you guys are going to perform a couple numbers for us. And we're really looking forward to it, and we thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
See you down there.
It's the world-famous K-Rock. It is the Kevin and Bean Show. We are at the Red Bull Sound Space, and Churches is here to perform live. What song are you guys going to do?
We are going to start with Leave a Trace.
Leave a Trace.
I gave up on time, just like you said you would. There are so many cracks away underneath me, and you say I got it wrong. But I try hard to uncover them.
I know.
How about that?
That sounded amazing. Wow. That is Lauren, Ian, and Martin, the members of the band Churches in the Red Bull Sound Space here at the world-famous K-Rock. It's so fascinating, Kevin. You probably noticed this, too, to see all three of them standing within 6 feet of each other while they perform. You can tell this is a group that is used to riding around the country in a van, right? They just they get nervous if they get too far apart from one another.
Quite close together, yes.
That sounded so great, you guys. We have time for another one if you do.
Yeah, definitely. Let's
Churches live at the Red Bull Sound Space.
This is The Mother We Share.
Never took your side, never cursed your name. I keep my lips shut tight until you go. We've come as far as we're ever gonna get until you realize that you should go. We'll cover you until you go. 'Cause if I told the truth, I would always be free and keep a prize with me until you go. Come in misery where you can see as old as your omens and the mother. The only ones left. I bet you even know where we could go. When it all scuffs up, you put your head in my hands. It's a souvenir for when you go.
How about that? Come on, people.
Excellent stuff. Really, really good, you guys.
Churches live at the Red Bull Sound Space. The new album is Every Open Eye. If you don't have it, you should definitely get it. And you guys are always kind to us. Thanks for coming in and doing this this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
By now, I think I don't think we even talked about it on the air, but by now, I think most people who have the internet have seen the video of the guy in Michigan who tried to kill a spider. He was filled up his gas tank, tried to kill a spider with an open flame. He used his lighter to try to kill a spider that was on his car. And, of course, what's the formula, Allie? I didn't do very well in school, but it's gasoline plus fire equals
boom
explosion.
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
So that's what happened. I mean, basically set his car and the gas station on fire. And he admits it was a dumb move. He said he just wasn't thinking.
Really? Hot take.
Dumb might be understated there in that case.
Yeah, he said, "I'm sorry, I didn't know. It was just one of those things that happened. It was just stupidity." They didn't charge him. They didn't charge him with any files, by the way. And the accident is being covered by the insurance, so it appears like he's just walked away from this thing, even though he did all that damage. But anyway, so I tell you that to say, look, how many times have we talked about spider stories over the years on this program? And I'm the voice of reason who says, "Don't be stupid, people. Yeah. A spider is not going to hurt you. Yep. People have an unnatural fear of spiders.
Being gets strangely defensive, like really a little angry.
Well, because I'm using logic and right. facts, that's why. Because 99.999999% of the spiders in the world are not going to hurt you. In fact, they are beneficial for you and the environment. If you see a spider in your house and you kill it because it's in your house, you're a dick.
Here's what happened. Right? Here's what happened. Last week, I killed a spider, and the first thought that came to my mind was, don't tell Bean. He'll really be angry.
But why would you kill a spider?
Because it was where I was living, and I didn't want it to be there.
Then put it outside.
Well, how?
It takes 15 seconds.
Here's spider, come in.
I pick up spiders and put them outside almost every day of my life. And you know
what? You put a collar on them and you name them as well.
Well, that's a little... All right. Having said that, we can all agree that we're not killing any more spiders because killing spiders is stupid, right? Well, we're all on the same page.
We all heard you say that.
Having said that, and to prove my point, Jonathan Hogg, 40 years old from Britain, felt a small, sharp pain while on a Qatar Airways flight a couple of months ago. And it turned out that he was bitten on an airplane by a brown recluse spider.
Oh. Brown recluse.
He almost lost his leg and nearly died. Within hours, the leg ballooned up and turned black. By the time he got to the hospital, it was bursting open. I'm not going to get through this story if you add the music to every sentence.
If it needs it, I add it.
I can send you the photo, Allie, if you'd like to see what his leg looked like.
I'm good.
After they cut away a large part of it where the venom had eaten the flesh, what left resembled something of a horror film. He spent a month in the hospital in South Africa instead of being on vacation there as he had planned, undergoing three operations. Three operations and a skin graft, but 3 months on, he's still receiving medical treatment. He was on a plane. He said, I was struggling to get comfortable during the journey. I crossed my legs to get into a better position when I felt a sharp pain radiating into my left leg. I turned on the light and clearly saw a spider running across the floor before hearing two stewardesses screaming, "Spider."
Actual audio from the plane, by the way.
After an operation to remove the dead flesh, the man said he was horrified to see the damage. I knew something was wrong. I had no idea how bad it was until I spoke with the surgeon. He told me how close I came to losing my leg. I was stunned. It really hit home when they removed the bandages and I saw what was left of my leg. It resembled something from a horror film. And for that, you have nothing? Resembled something from a horror film. So my point is the takeaway
here. Your point is you were wrong all this time.
Is don't kill spiders because what are the chances the spider is going to hurt you? That's my whole point right there.
All right.
All right. You are running out of days because the sold-out K-Rock Almost Acoustic Christmas 2015 shows are this weekend, Saturday and Sunday night at the Forum. We're talking about four tickets for both nights for you if you call us right now at 1-800-520-1067. You are going to have to earn them. You will play a game coming up just after 7:30. But call now, 1-800-520-1067. Good luck from the Kevin and Bean Show.
Students in England can now study pizza in college.
Yeah! Where was this when I was in school?
Right? I would have graduated had this existed when I went to college.
This is really sort of crazy, but they're working with Pizza Hut and they're actually doing a college course.
It is a part of a new degree from Manchester Metropolitan University. As Kevin said, they have teamed up with Pizza Hut. They will teach you everything from how to make pizza, health and safety aspects, financial analysis. When you are done with this course, it sounds like you're going to be ready to open up your own pizza place. Plus, you, I imagine, get to eat lots of pizza while you're studying.
Well, quality control, yeah.
Sure.
I mean, you got to check it out. Right. Yeah. You can't just put it out there without tasting it first. So we wanted to find out more about this, and we asked Dave if he could line somebody up. And I'm not sure who we have, but I think we have a representative from the school. Hello there, sir. Can you hear us okay?
Hey, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
How you go?
I'm sorry, but our producer neglected to tell us your name, sir. We don't know who we're talking to.
I am a professor, Anthony Confalone.
Confalone. All right, professor.
There you go. How's everything for you there? United States, moi, America. I love you.
Well, we love you, too. Congratulations on this course. It sounds like it's a lot of work, but also a lot of fun.
We're going to have a summer fun.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you about the summer fun we're going to have.
Please.
Making a pizza pie, the most perfect food everybody loves so much.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, but are you going to do that every day?
Every day we make a pizza pie. What kind of pizza pie you like? Hey, what do you like on your pizza pie? You like a mushrooms? You like a black olive? You like a sausage? Hey, you like a sausage? Hey, I got a sausage right here for you. Hey, that's right, lady. How about a little sausage?
Well, I mean, if you're offering.
It's a spicy sausage, too.
It's my favorite.
It's a bigger spicy sausage.
Okay. This is going
on. You're going to like my sausage. I can make a thin crust, I can make a thick crust, I can make a Chicago style, I can make a New York style. You name it, a pizza, I can make it.
You know what's really interesting is I think that if you were to ask 100 people on the street what's the best food of all time, I wouldn't be surprised if pizza were the most common answer. What do you guys think?
You ask 100 people on the street, hey, what's your favorite kind of food?
Right.
100 people going to say pizza.
I don't know everybody, but
everybody going to say it.
Most people, though, I think.
And anybody don't say it, we take them in the back alley, right? And we take it, hey, come here. Hey, what's that? Your shoes on that? Boom! We hit them in the back of the head with a piece of metal pipe.
I don't think we need to do that.
And we kick them in the teeth until they cannot eat the pizza no more because they don't deserve to eat the pizza with no teeth. if they don't love a pizza, they can drink a soup.
I would be very concerned if I were one of your students if I get out of line and say the wrong thing, Professor.
As long as you say you love a pizza, then we have no problem. You say you don't like a pizza, then we got a problem. Then I punch in your face, I kick your head, I take a hand grenade, I put it up in your hand.
What?
Whoa, this escalated quickly.
I don't say I got to put a pin. I just say I got to put it there.
Oh, okay. Now, is it, forgive me if this
is stupid. The bean's okay with that.
Yeah.
As long as you're not pulling the pin, that's good. That's good. That's good with me.
Forgive me if this is a stupid question, but is it difficult to make the perfect pizza?
Oh, what's the matter, you? Got you no respect? This is the place. Shut up in your face.
I'm just asking. I figured you're the expert. How often do we get a chance to talk to an expert pizza maker?
Of course it's hard to make a perfect pizza. You think I make a perfect pizza every time? No, I don't make a perfect pizza every time.
Okay.
You don't. Okay.
But I try. I try so hard to make a perfect pizza. I cry tears, and I cry sweat so much, and I work so hard on the pizza, and maybe that's why the pizza's not so good, because it's all full of sweat and tears.
It sounds like maybe that's not what you want.
Oh, it's smelly and wet.
Oh,
and I'm done.
That sounds awful. All right, so the course is underway. Have you started teaching yet? Have you had your first class of graduating seniors? What's going on?
Yes, I'm a teacher. So far, so many kids, and they all so much love a pizza.
Uh-huh.
And I'm here in England to teach a class.
Right.
Right.
And it's amazing because they go, hey, it's food that's not brown, and they love it so much.
Hey, sounds like you're going to be very popular over there, then.
Oh, they love my sausage here in England. Hey, England, you want my sausage?
I'd like to take your course. Can I do that from here? Do you do it online?
I don't do it online, but I come to your house.
Oh.
Oh.
You got a wife?
Oh.
I'm going to bring a sausage.
No, I don't.